This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody. This is the How to Hunt Deer podcast. My name is Dan. His name is Jason. And I don't know what it's like where you're at, Jason, but this morning it is wet where I'm at.
Yeah, we're getting a thunderstorm right now. So I thought we were having a little technical difficulty. I never know where I'm at, if it's going to be my service or if it's the kids, because, you know, there's seven other people here in the house. So, we got some rain this weekend, which was much needed. We were extremely dry, I think, in the last couple weeks, man. I haven't mowed a whole lot. So, a little early in the year for the dry weather like this. Normally, I'm not seeing it till like July, August timeframe. But
yeah, I read an interesting little article about there's this line that is in the United States, and it is this, there's this arid portion. It's always been kind of dry from the Rocky Mountains on, you know, east of the Rocky Mountains to a certain point. And then that dictates the rainfall that happens and where most of the rainfall kind of lands. Well, they're saying that this line that I don't know what they necessarily called it, but this line over the last 35 years has traveled basically 140 miles east, meaning there's less rain further into the United States. And so I don't know what that means, but I can definitely say in the last 10 years summers have been way drier, and when we do get rain, all of the rain seems to come in really big portions. It's not like for some reason I just remember when I was a kid it would rain once a week and it would rain all day long, there would be some really hard rains, but it would also just be like all day soakers, what I mean?
And
I don't know,
I think the snowfall's definitely a lot less in the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, I used to plow snow for 20 some years, and it's almost ironic because I feel like once I stop plowing snow, that's like it when it stops snowing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird because we're dry in the winters and we're dry in the summers, and we get, you know, times of the year where we're wet enough, I guess. And sometimes we catch back up. Like this year we caught back up, but then we hit May, and here where I live, this is the driest May on record that we've had. So
yeah,
it's a little early, but the crops got what they needed this weekend. 100%. And it looks like this week we're looking at more rainfall through the weekend. So
yeah. 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 Lots of wetness. It's one of those things where, some of these rains, they were so loud this morning because it was coming down so hard. My kids woke up at like 4 a.m. and they're like, can we get in bed with you? I'm like, no, get out of here. I don't get woken up by the rain. I get woken up because you guys come in here because of the storms and the lightning. So go back to bed. So, like a couple things that I want to talk about real quick. Dude, I was driving home yesterday after church and I saw my first velvet buck, and he was standing in somebody's front yard with a doe. It could have been a doe, could have been a button buck, but he had main beam started and he had brow tines. And so it kind of got me fired up to like wanting to get my trail cameras out. And the goal was to get my trail cameras out this week while my daughter's at camp.
Yeah.
And my kids, they don't, like, I was going to take my kids with me, but now, dude, like, I don't think it's going to happen because I won't be able to drive back into the farm to go do it unless I walk.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like doing that.
So I think it was probably week or two, not quite 2 weeks ago, I got my cameras set up and got them out and whatever. And I've got a couple of velvet bucks on camera and one here at home. He's decent, you know. He's out. He's got his main beam. He's got his brows, but it's just exciting to see him, you know. And it kind of got me fired up there as far as kind of starting to take inventory, getting a little more of a game plan of where I'm going to focus this year.
Right.
And it's funny every year too, because like here at home, it's the smallest piece that I hunt.
Right.
And like that's where the deer show up at first. You know, it's like, so do you start putting your eggs in that basket? You know, we can go down so many rabbit holes with that, because like my best property, I don't know. I see a couple raccoons. I see some rabbits during the day, but you know, I'm not seeing the big giant bucks.
Oh yeah. And here's what I will tell you about the farm, my main farm that I've been hunting for the longest period of time. 2027 will mark 20 years on this farm that I've had permission to, which just doesn't even seem real that I've been hunting for, you know, hunting one farm for that long. And so like the farm that I had before that I lost, that made me go knock on doors to go get access, is where like I had a lot of tough lessons learned, like from that, you know, 2000, I was like 2000, I don't even remember, like 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I knew that the guy wasn't doing health-wise, so I started reaching out to other farms. Of course, he passed away, farm got sold, and now I have this farm. But it just, I don't know. I think back on that farm and how the lessons that it kind of taught me, and I don't even know, this is a rant at this point. I don't even know where I'm going with it, other than I can't believe I've been on one farm for 20 years.
Well, I mean, we could really expand on this, because while you were talking about that, the length of time I've been on some of my farms, it's jaw dropping, but yet it's also alarming in the fact of how many private lands since you started hunting have you hunted?
Mm-hmm.
Private lands, not public.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it like, for me right now, the longest property that I've got currently is one that we own, and it's been 14 years. And then if I go to the next one, it's in that 14 to 15 year time frame too, you know? So it's kind of crazy that's all I have for intel also. Yeah. You know, there's guys that hunt their entire lives on the same farms, and they're 25, 30 years, you know?
I want to stop a second. I want to do our commercial, because I feel like we're going to lose it, you know, if we don't, like, we'll get into the episode and forget to do it. But I want to send a huge shout out to Code Blue Scents. Yeah. If you're looking for real or synthetic deer urines, if you're looking for scent elimination products, mock scrape kits, go visit CodeBlueScents.com, discount code NFC. No, sorry. Discount code HTH20. For 20% off. A lot of really cool products in that lineup. Go check them out and find what works for you. So, okay. The days of permission on private farms seems to be dwindling away, right? Like, the people that I hunt on, one is like, she's older. I need to call her again. I keep in touch with her multiple times throughout the year, basically telling her I'm thankful for the property that I hunt. I truly feel she gets taken advantage of by some of the other people who use her property as their own property. I've always tried to be really helpful with her. I've installed satellite dishes. I've fixed gates. I've fixed fence. I've wrangled cattle back into yards. I've fixed, ruts in the ground. I have wrangled horses back into her property, goats back into her property. I've done a whole bunch of different things to, not just take, but give back.
Yeah.
And she's cool with that, right? I think I think that she knows she could probably make a lot of money if she leased her property out to an outfitter, or she leased it out to an individual like myself or something like that. But she also understands that it's a blessing to have this, and that if you turn it into a money thing, then certain people can't enjoy it. And I think she just really likes to have people enjoy her property. And so it's awesome to have that, but there is an end point on that. And I honestly don't even know how old she is. But it's coming.
It for sure is. Well, I was just looking yesterday. I was down here. We were cleaning the office and trying to get a little bit more organized. And I found a paper from 2012, and it was a landowner-sponsored application for Montana. Mm-hmm. And I had gone to Montana 2 years in a row to, it was called then, it was the Barton Ranch. Well, it was just owned by a mom and pop, you know, and they had somewhere between 4,000 and 7,000 acres out there. And it was a friend of mine who initially in 2010 decided, hey, let's go hunt there. So we did, a group of four of us did, and then the next year, three of us did, and it was just, this lady lived by herself, and she was, you know, 84 years old, I think, at the time, and she let us come out, and her hospitality was amazing. She let us sleep in her house, and, you know, she never asked for a dime from us. You know, we always sent her gifts and stuff as appreciation, yeah. But those days are gone, you know, and I remember she passed away a few years after that. But it kind of the same thing here. I've got a permission piece that is probably my favorite piece, and I always do what I can, you know what I mean, to show that appreciation.
All right. So you send her gifts and things to like help out a little bit.
Yeah. So we just showed like the appreciation of it, you know, and then we would buy groceries or whatever cause she'd want to cook us dinners and everything like that. It was full hospitality and there was nothing asked of us, you know, no fees, no nothing. And I remember she passed away, you know, and I thought back then, and that was like 2012, I think was the last time we'd gone. And I thought back to it like, man, these days are coming to an end. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, I still look at like one of my favorite pieces the same way. And I literally just try to help out at where I can, if mm-hmm. I can. And each year I'm re-asking, you know, do I still have permission this year? And and you almost, I hate to say it, you almost like wait for the day that you don't have permission.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is going to be like, I don't know. This is where I get real frustrated because 1% of the people in this country own land, essentially. I think that's what the number is. And then obviously you have people who are back, you know, like back 20 years ago, no one owned, like, there was no value on whitetails. Maybe there was, it was starting to get there. Yeah. Right. But when I was a kid, there was a value on big bucks, but that value was held by a very small amount of people. And then as information gets out, it's like, I can buy a land, I can do habitat management, plant food plots, not shoot small deer, and I can shoot big deer too. Like, then what happened was there was more of a value on that. Right. And so people from out of state would go and buy land in Iowa or Illinois. And you know, these are things that we've talked about before, but what's happening is, you know, everybody's like, oh, just go buy some land, go buy some land. I'm like, with what money? Like, this economy is crazy. I don't make $500,000 a year. And by the way, that's the average of what you need to buy land, according to some of the people that I've talked to who are in the hunting. Like, I asked the question, how much money does your average customer make a year? $500,000.
A household makes $500,000 in order to buy some property.
Yep. And that is in the 1% of American earners.
Right.
By the way. Right. So you need to be a 1%er to average, on average, because I'm sure there's like a little parcel that was in, you know, a little parcel of their clientele that maybe bought a 10-acre farm, right? Yeah. Or they bought it, you know, or they bought something else. So it gets frustrating because I know my oldest boy loves And my youngest boy, he's even like, hey, dude, let's do it. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go do this. And go hunt. And I'm just freaked out because where are they going to hunt, dude? Mm-hmm. Like, where are they going to hunt? Especially in Iowa, they're going to have to travel the public land in other states.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think that's kind of where I went. Gosh, years ago, I'm going to go back a little bit further, and I found another paper when I was cleaning here that mm-hmm. was from 21 years ago, and it was when I initially joined Access Illinois Outdoors. Mm-hmm. So every year, you know, you pay a $25 fee, and basically they will send you a list of landowners here in Illinois, and they will have counties broken down into who owns land, and you can get matched up with them, and it's all pay to play game. Mm-hmm. You know, so some of them could be yearly leases, some of them could be monthly, so on and so forth. Well, back then, that's how I was looking for land then also.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's even 20 years ago. Well, yeah. It got me on a whole thing of that's kind of how this year's fall is going to go with this public land hunting, is I stumbled upon that while I was on a hunt that I had taken 20 years ago. And then, you know, it just led to meeting different people and everything. But as far as the private stuff goes, if it's not gobbled up, it's going to be real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. It just freaks me out a little bit. Like it's something that the amount of happiness that hunting has given me throughout the course of my life, I want to be able to share that with my kids, and the outdoors and fishing and things like that. And I just see it dwindling, for the access, the availability to the average Joe, all of that stuff. It just, I don't know, maybe I'm overdoing it, and maybe it like, you know what I truly feel like would be the best? If there was some kind of crash, some kind of bubble that gets popped, something that would happen to hunting that would set it back. I don't know, that would set it back, and people could just go knock on doors again, and or the big buck thing just kind of disappeared. But, you know, number one, people want big bucks. Number two, people don't want other people on their properties. Huh. Right.
It's funny because the more people that you talk to, I mean, at least I see it in this perspective, mm-hmm. the more people that just want to be left alone. They like don't, they almost don't even like the interaction or anything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is like a post-COVID thing. I don't know if this is a technology thing, or I don't know if just as a society, we just don't enjoy each other as much as we used to.
Right. Well, we don't need to.
No.
But we got social media to take care of that.
Yeah.
Right. This is kind of weird, but I was watching this round table YouTube where all these different people from different walks of life kind of sit around a table, and they talk, like, you know, one's a Democrat, one's a Republican, one, you know, is a preacher, one is, you know, like a skateboard shop owner or whatever the case is. And this has nothing to do with hunting, just about the American, like an American social media and cell phones and that type of technology. The guy goes, man, I went out to a bar the other week, and there was a dance floor in this bar, and no one was on it the entire night. And he goes, I think that it's because people have a fear of getting recorded, and they don't want to get posted. They don't want to go viral. They don't want to get posted to social media, and they don't want to really explore out. So they just sit back and do nothing now. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. that's what people are doing. They're just sitting back, doing nothing, scrolling on their phones. You know, that's the majority of people. Now there's some outliers like us who go out and try to get it every year. But, yeah. You know, I don't know, man. It's just, I don't know.
So you kind of, before we started recording, initially started talking about something like this with what's actually happening in Oregon. Oh, kind dude. Of.
Dude.
So I don't know if you want to go down that road or not, but I mean, in so many ways, like whether it's political or not, I mean, and whether you ask me, are you Republican or Democrat right now or not? Like, I'm gonna be honest with you. Like, I don't trust any of them. First off, second off, I like my beliefs. Like, I could sit down and I could have a discussion with this guy or that guy, and I'm gonna find something in each conversation that might actually make sense to me. Yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest things, just as humans, that we are lacking is the fact that we can't sit down and we can't discuss anything. We literally just want to point fingers, blame, and then take no accountability, but then find a way to fill our pockets.
Right. Yeah, it's stupid. Dude, it's stupid. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with what is going on in Oregon, and dude, I had a conversation with a guy in Oregon, man, years and years ago. And this guy was like, hey, did you know that they're trying to outlaw mousetraps? And I'm like, what? That's bananas to me. That's so crazy. He's like, yeah, dude, they're trying to outlaw all these things, like even farming. And I'm like, dude, no way. No way that'll ever happen. Fast forward, I'm going to guess it was 10 to 7 years ago. And now look what's happening. It is actually getting very close to going to a vote to where people are going to be able, they've had over 100,000 signatures to get this thing on the ballot. And here's what it means: no trapping, no fishing, no hunting, no farming, no mouse trap shit like that, which would, I guess, be trapping. No animal breeding. So like no animal husbandry. So you can't breed two dogs together. Shit like that. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And so all these crazy things that we thought were so crazy all these years ago are now happening.
Yep. I was going to say, here we are.
Yeah. And here we are. And so that's a perfect example of, like, you know, you live in Illinois. Right. Yeah. So you have Chicago area heavily influenced how the voting turns out in your state. And that's what's happening out in Oregon, where Portland and all of the coastal bigger cities are influencing this type of political agenda that's happening, and that will ultimately affect farmers. And you want to talk about an opportunity for a lot of people to come together, farming, hunting. Like, dude, I even think like pesticides would be outlawed.
Yeah.
Right. Like all that stuff would be outlawed. And so this would be a really big opportunity for a lot of people to come together to support hunting and farming and all these things. That what's the basic land, right? The land is what's going to bring all this together.
So. Well, I mean, you mentioned Illinois, and obviously, you know, we talk quite a bit of sports with our kids and everything, and everybody's probably not shocked to hear that the Chicago Bears are no longer going to be the Chicago Bears, you know, and it's like, that's how much we're screwing ourselves up with decisions that we're making, you know. So now Indiana is going to take on another professional sports team. Just how much revenue you're losing by doing that? Yeah, how much tradition you're losing because of that? and why? Because we just want a little bit more money here or there. Mm-hmm. And it's all it ever comes down to. It seems like it's a power trip or it's about money. But to that point, you start changing things like this in Oregon. You start changing things like this in Chicago. You know, it's not just a hunting thing. It's massive changes.
Dude, imagine hunting getting taken off the landscape. You want to talk about an overpopulation, crop destruction, you know, animal car collisions, sickness, disease, essentially hunting becomes illegal now. And how many people, like, if you took hunting away from a group of people, they're still going to, I'm telling you right now, they're still going to hunt.
Yeah.
Like, they're still going to go do it, especially on your own private land.
100%.
And then what are you going to do? Raise taxes to have more people, like more DNR officers, go out and try to, take a look at this? Like, dude, no, that's not going to happen. Well, that's not going to happen. Who's going to police that? Nobody.
No, but it's the same thing. Like when we initially started taking on CWD here in Illinois, the state's answer was to hire that done, right? To hire sharpshooters and stuff. And maybe the program is effective to some degree, but we didn't even know what we were dealing with or how it was spreading or any of those effective ways to actually do it. But they didn't turn it to the hunters first. Mm-hmm. You know, they just looked to another source. So like, oh, let's hire sharpshooters and let's pay them X amount of dollars instead of like, maybe let's lengthen seasons or let's give out more tags. Or there wasn't that discussion in the beginning. But ultimately, I feel like if something like this happens in Oregon, I mean, not only are you going to get backlash in Oregon, but you're going to see places like Colorado are going to follow suit. They're going to eventually do the same thing. And then, I mean, how's that look? Like you were saying, with the landscape of all these animals just overpopulating, destroying it, because it's not going to be just crops that they're destroying. They're going to be destroying your landscape around your house. They're going to be chewing up your yard. They're going to be, I don't know.
So. Funny you brought that up, because I talked with some guys, I believe in Michigan. Was it Michigan? Yeah, Michigan. And I think it's either Michigan or Pennsylvania. I can't remember. Anyway, there's a group of guys who they have urban hunts. Yep. So they go and they knock on doors and then they put together a list of landowners who allow them to go hunt. And these guys are killing like 300 deer a year. This group of them are killing 300 deer a year in, which blows my mind, 300 deer a year in, like, I think it was 500 acres. Like 500 total acres, and it's not one big giant piece. It's like sprinkled all over. But that's how overpopulated the deer were.
Yeah.
So guy goes up to the farm, goes up to this house and knocks on the door and was like, hey, would it be possible if we're part of this program to, you know, stop the overpopulation, and it's all the benefits, they take the meat and they give it to pantries or they use it themselves, all that stuff. And the lady goes, absolutely not. I am 100% against deer hunting. Deer, that's brutal. You know, that's caveman stuff. We don't need to hunt anymore. Blah, just goes off on this guy. All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game. But I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef. And that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. She takes the piece of paper from him. 2 or 3 weeks later, deer are destroying her thousands of dollars of landscaping, eating all of her trees and bushes and destroying it, even like kicking over the retaining walls to get up to all that stuff. Yeah, I've had some time to rethink this. So these people have this idea of no hunting, but the second it starts to like make their house look bad or like they're messing with their money or something like that, then somehow they change their tune. And this gigantic amount of conviction has now changed, you know, because of this. And so I even lose respect for people like that. Well, thanks for letting us hunt, but you have no backbone. Like, what do you believe in type shit? So I don't know, man. It just,
yeah. Well, I mean, you said something with the Oregon thing with people collaborating and coming together, you know, whether it was farmers and hunters coming together, you know, and I'm going to give the scenario of like my old house was definitely more residential. It was smaller, like 1 to 3 acre lots. Some of them were 5 acre lots, but it was basically like a big subdivision, but you had to have that much land. Well, I could go out at any given point of the day and there'd be deer in my backyard.
Yeah.
Like I could literally shoot a deer, I mean, whenever. And now fast forward to where I'm at now, I'm actually in a much better location, much better spot. And it looked primo 10 years ago when I started here.
Yeah.
Well, over the years, the farmers have destroyed all these fence lines, you know? So like when I knock on doors and talk to the farmers, like they've taken the fence rows out. So there's no deer in the area, you know? So they just gravitate towards these urban areas, mm-hmm. they gravitate towards where there's more vegetation and stuff. And it's not always just a thick hardwood, you know? So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like we've done shot ourselves in the foot with, well, we've taken out fence lines, so there's no deer in this area. We don't want to shoot deer because of our precious, you know, mindset with, I don't know. You just go back and forth with it. But the reality of it is you can't just shut it off. There has to be some sort of maintaining the herd and everything.
Right. It was funny you bring that up because I took my daughter to church camp yesterday, and I'm driving through what most of Iowa looks like, and that is ag country. And I mean flat, and I mean this is like flat. There's fence rows there, but the farmers farm right up to the fence rows. The only thing you're going to find is maybe a buffer strip and some steeper cuts. Like when I say steeper cuts, I mean like the reason that not all of the soil in Iowa is down in Louisiana is because of these buffer strips or, you know, these water, you know, like these waterways. But a lot of that stuff is tiled, right? And the water just goes straight out into the river, right? Anyway, what's going on is that is what Iowa looks like. That is a majority of what I was thinking. I go, this is all of Iowa right here, except for the 1/3 or 1/4 of the state that's like south of Interstate 80. You go 50 miles south of Interstate 80, and then you'll run into these river systems. And for the most part, there's some trees in these river systems. There's a lot more. Southern Iowa looks a lot like northern Missouri, which is awesome from a habitat standpoint. So that tells you the only difference between Missouri and Iowa is the regulations.
Regulations. Yep, I was just gonna say that.
Yep. And so I was looking into, I was kind of just daydreaming about like, man, imagine the potential Iowa could have for a big buck state if our farming practices were just a little bit different.
Yep.
Right. And we did have, those more buffer strips, and we did less tiling, and we expanded those buffer strips from waterways, and we had trees growing in those places and stuff. And I'm like, you want to talk about a state that would be number one, no matter what, would be like if that ever happened.
Well, I mean, Illinois or Iowa, it really wouldn't matter. But if you used better practices and better management, both of the states, I mean, even Missouri, there's like a triangle of it where it's the habitat and the terrain is amazing. Yeah. So if you went by the same regulations, you could have amazing deer in and around that area. But here, if you go to Northwest Illinois, it looks a lot like Northeast Iowa. Mm-hmm. You know, there's spots where it's very severely steep, and mm-hmm. you know, the terrain's not just flat, but then you come out of that a little bit, you get closer to the Chicago area, and then you get halfway down through the state and it's just flat farm ground, and now we're seeing all these solar fields and all these wind turbines, and it's crazy that we're just there. In a nutshell, we just went to a softball game the other night. And I look across the field. My wife says, "Do you see that?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "I didn't see that the last time we were here." I said, "No, I don't think they had all the panels on it, but it was this gigantic solar field, you know, and we're losing all this farm ground to stuff like that." So now take that Oregon mindset where we're going to eliminate, you know, the hunting and all that. Now we add all these solar fields and everything. Where are all the animals going to be?
Oh, they get pushed out and then they don't breed again.
Yeah.
Right. So there is this road that runs from essentially Coralville, Iowa, which is kind of like Iowa City, right?
Yep.
And it's called 965. When I first started coming to the University of Iowa and hanging out in a small, it's not small anymore, a town called North Liberty, there was farm fields on both sides. You'd run in through North Liberty and then you'd take 965 all the way up to Cedar Rapids, right? Well, dude, I can remember seeing tons of deer, beautiful bucks. And then now where all of that is all apartment complexes. It's industrial parks. It's Jimmy John's and, you know, nail salons and things like that, all the way up to this river that this bridge crosses. And then you cross the bridge. And then once you get past the Corps Engineer ground, you start to see development on both sides of that road again, where the habitat for these deer was amazing. I mean, I remember driving down going, you know, and then I finally had the opportunity to talk to a landowner there who farms some of this ground and has sold some of it off. And he's just like, dude, you have no idea how good the hunting was here. But the development has essentially moved all of the deer out of the area.
Yep. I mean,
so I'm looking at it right now. And then the other thing is like these data centers that are going up and this industrial park over by where we're at, dude, I'm talking, where's it at here? Oh, there it is. Dude, I'm talking like thousands of acres of buildings being put up.
So these data centers that you're talking about, was this on one of your podcasts where you guys were talking about drilling the well?
Yep.
And the water and they just went ahead and did it and they paid the fine.
Yep. So they said, they didn't say, no, you can't build here. No, you can't develop this. They said, no, you can't drill the well. So they drilled the well and they just paid a fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me.
But I mean, so we're talking about like, you're talking about all these industrial areas and stuff. So rewind. Oh gosh, 15 years to the last I was in the operators union. A lot of our work was in Chicago and in the cities and stuff. So I'd commute, you know, an hour every day at least, if not further. And in that time frame, I saw so many industrial areas get built up, and then like the next portion would be shut down, and like all these vacant buildings, you know, and all these just empty, destroyed buildings that weren't being used anymore. And we just put another one next to it, put another one behind it, you know. And I just think that the management of just U.S. ground in general is poorly managed.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, even back in the day, I don't know if you ever heard about, I met some of these guys who would hunt the suburbs of Chicago. They lived out where farming still met, like, I don't even know, like, where farming still met, like, the expansion. And these guys were finding sheds from, like, 200 inchers every year. And they were killing, these guys were essentially doing what the Seek One guys were doing, but they were doing it 20 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I know some of those guys and I've seen some of these big deer that these guys have, but that's all. I'm sure there's going to be someone who listens to that going, it's not all dried up. But what I'm getting at is it's like a lot of it is dried up. Like a lot of these properties are now developed into suburbs, unless it is now an official like a nature center or a nature reserve that you can't hunt in. All of it's gone. And a lot of these things were like, you know, like a guy would own a piece of land that bordered up against, that would border up against these reserves. And that's where they would kill a lot of these big deer. But then all of those now have been sold and developed. So the only places these deer hang out now are in non-huntable places.
Yeah. And I just got kind of sidetracked with like, we were talking about all this from Oregon and like all these decision making and stuff. And I'm pretty sure that you shared something about YouTube banning something. Am I correct?
Oh no, YouTube. One of my YouTube channels got deleted because I had like 5,000 subscribers on it. And you know, I was talking about this with another guy. I don't even want to talk about it because I don't want this to get flagged.
Yeah.
So how am I supposed to express my discontent with what happened? And really what it was about, one, hunting, and two, things that go bang, bang. You know what I mean? And I'm even afraid to say the word.
Well, and that's where I'm going with it. Like, I didn't want to bring it up, but it's also one of those things, like, they can censor you so much in everything.
Yeah.
And if they get the votes, they will vote you right out of town. So, like, this in Oregon is actually a legit thing. Like, it will happen.
Yeah. Yep. And all because some of the stories that were told on my podcast included hunts with things right. that go bang, bang. Right.
Yep.
And stories where, a guy would, he would tell a story about when he was a kid and he would, I'm going to tell the story without saying the words, right? Which just doesn't that make you feel almost oppressed? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. We're knocking on 250 years as a country, mm-hmm. but yet we're supposed to be a freedom of speech and everything. Mm-hmm. Where is that? Yeah. If we can't talk about that,
well, and we this can is talk hot, about it.
Right.
We're not going to get in trouble we'll be censored by the company that this Spotify won't censor me. Apple Podcasts won't censor me. But YouTube will. Right. Yeah. And so if I talk about it, well, here's the story that one of the stories that got me, got one of my check marks. A guy was telling, he's like, when I was a kid, our principal said, your things that go bang, bang are better in my office than in your car, right? They're safer in my office. So during pheasant season, they would take them, put them in his office. And, you know, the word school was mentioned and then the other trigger words were mentioned. And so the algorithm went in and said, okay, these two things don't go together. Warning. And then I was like, hey, this was a story. It wasn't about any violence and things like that. And then they go, well, to protect our blah, 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 we have to do this. Our audience, we have to do this. I'm like, dude. And so luckily, I wasn't generating any income from any of that, but from my YouTube channel, just because I knew something like this was going to happen. And that's why I don't like try to make money off social media, because you start talking the truth or you start talking about 2A, then you're toast, dude. You're going to get flagged.
All right, so this takes me to another thing that's completely not deer related, but at night, periodically, we'll get all the kids in one room, and then they always want me to tell stories. You know, they've loved hearing hunting stories, they love hearing whatever, and so I got to this point, I don't know, several months ago, where I would just tell make believe stories, because it's always what I did to my kids when I was just tucking them in when they're little. So I mean, obviously, our kids range from newborn and then 8 years old to 13. You know, and there's six of them through that. So the oldest five will sit there and they will listen to these stories, and I've created like characters, right? And these characters have like maybe a deficiency or whatever. And it's not like, I don't even want to say the word, but it's like, okay, maybe something happened to my hand or something happened to my foot or whatever, right? And then I'll give this character like maybe it's 7 foot tall. And so while I'm describing these characters through this story and what this character does or whatever, our oldest daughter is sitting there and she's typing all these notes into AI, like ChatGPT or whatever. Yep. And then she will create these images, right, based off of my story. And then she will send us these images when we're laying in bed and, you know, we're laughing about it. Mm-hmm. But then some nights she'll be like, I can't create this person because this person you described goes against their standards.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like, it's just crazy to me. Yep. Like all I'm doing is telling a make-believe story. So my kids laugh and we have fun and everything, but I got something censoring me.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep. I think certain states are going to be safe from a lot of this because of the tradition of like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, and Michigan. Like the tradition is too steep for anything like that. Iowa, anything that where there's a farming culture where animals are used to being, you know, for food. Like when you're in a state where the focus of an animal is for food, then congrats. But they probably said that about Eastern Oregon too, until there's this big uprising somewhere else that's going to affect the entire state. There, I mean, they're even having talks about like succeeding into Idaho. So Eastern, like that's how crazy that conversation is. Again, they've drawn a line. They said, if you're, if you live to the east of this line, would, you know, would you vote to join Idaho? And cool. And Idaho's like, yeah, I guess we'll take you.
I mean, you got Washington right, you know, right there. You got California right there. And then, I mean, you could move just a little bit into Colorado. I mean, you're right there and like taking over a mass of the western portion of the United States. And it's mm-hmm. like, and it's not far off here where I'm at, you mm-hmm. know, because our, I don't even want to get into that political scheme of it. It's like, it's just crazy that we can't sit down and make reason with these things. Mm-hmm. It's either this or way nothing. or that way.
Well, that's human nature in general, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I have some beliefs True. that are all or nothing too. Right. Like, you know, I like all these things that this guy's like, hey, that sounds good, dude. That sounds real good. I like that. Oh, but that one thing, that's how you're going to vote. I'm sorry. My values don't allow me to believe in that. Like, yeah. I'm sorry. Good luck, but I can't do it. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like it's never like now more than ever. I feel like hunters, especially hunters, need to be like, I know I talk shit on crossbows, right? And I truly believe that a crossbow is not archery, right? And it doesn't belong in an archery season. But if your state says crossbows are legal, by all means, use them, right? Go do it. Cause I would rather see a state continue to have a strong hunting lifestyle, tradition, program with crossbows. Then, you know, if I was going to sit here and weigh all these things, like no hunting or crossbows in archery season. Well, of course, crossbows, right? No hunting or, you know, high powered rifles during the rut. Okay. I'll take high powered rifles during the rut. Like, of course, those types of things, but I don't necessarily know if we need to do that.
Well, I think what we're kind of missing sometimes is the fact that when there is a difference or a discrepancy with something, what happens is there's a silent group that will actually get you to come against each other. Yeah. Right. And that silent group does this all the time, mm-hmm. right? Because they're on the outside, like, I want them to self-destruct because yeah. I actually want hunting to end. So whether it's the big buck thing versus shooting the spike buck, whether it's a crossbow versus a compound bow, whether it's public land versus private land, whatever that may be, whatever that looks like to you, just remember that you at the end of the day are still a hunter. Okay. Right. And then there's this outside group that actually wants you to fight against each other, because if you get pulling this way too far, you're going to lose the numbers.
Right. Right. Yeah, that makes sense, man. I'm for some reason, maybe it's my age, maybe I'm always looking to the future about what life will be like, right? Like, technology is crazy from the standpoint of how it's benefited, like the cell phone. You know, like, for example, I was looking up maps of Chicago and I zoomed way, way, way out, right? Yep. And there's a little dot on my computer that shows exactly where my daughter's at right now.
Yeah.
Okay. And yep. she's not at our house. She's at church camp. So that makes me feel good knowing where she's at right now.
Right.
Okay. That's a benefit of technology. Obviously, some people would argue whether you're the trail camera, things like that. What the benefit, if that's a net positive, you know, if that's ruining woodsmanship, you know, that I think that's where a lot of people are saying, technology is replacing woodsmanship. Okay. Like, what are you going to do about it? Like, are you going to ban it? Are you going to, hey, let's do this. Let's do this real quick. Pros and cons.
Okay.
What are the pros and cons of using cellular trail cameras?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I'll give my list of pros first. Okay. And then I'll see if I can attack the con. So pros, obviously, once that camera's set up and out there, I don't have to drive out there. And for me, a lot of my hunting ground is half hour, 45, an hour away. So I don't have to mess with it. I'm also not disturbing the timber. I'm not going in and out, you know. I get instant pictures, like right now. Cell camera, I don't have to necessarily pull a memory card out, put it in a card reader. I don't have to take any film out, because this is funny, because I was literally just looking at one of those gigantic box Moultrie cameras that I had with the great big square batteries in it. Yep. Just the other day, I found it in a tote. I think the technology with the cell camera that you can, with the on-demand video, you can request within 24 hours. I think the imaging is great, you know, the clarity of these pictures. I think there's a lot of things that are really good with them.
From a strategy standpoint, I'm going to run through some of the pros that you didn't mention. And that was, I mean, you breezed over it, but the fact that I can get real-time data sent to me about a specific buck, you know, that would be on my farm at a given time. Right. So it's like, dude, I got this buck coming through this pinch point every day at the same time. Bingo. Huge, huge strategy. I'm going to go sit in this tree stand that's off or on this, and I can go kill this deer. Right. So it's assisted in the strategy, standpoint of it, to identifying, larger antlered animals, or knowing where a doe group comes through, you know, whether you're a meat hunter or it's a benefit for meat hunters or antler hunters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Now, cons or whatever.
Yeah. So cons, obviously, anytime you're running any sort of cameras, you got some sort of cost involved, you know, and the more the camera triggers, the more you're going to spend in batteries or rechargeables or a solar pad. I think the negatives too, I think you can actually, I don't want to say learn too much without having to put the effort in, but I think that's ultimately what you're doing. Yeah. Once the camera's set, man, I don't have to touch those woods. And that's a con in a way of I don't have to learn my woods.
Right.
I think anytime you intrude in the property, I think that can be detrimental. So I think that can be a con. And I also feel like there is a curve in the system.
Yeah.
When you have real-time knowledge versus I either have to manually go out and check my memory card, or I have to just rely on my woodsmanship because I don't have cameras. I think there's definitely a curve in it. You know, it's not going to slam dunk make the shot for you, but I think it definitely can be a factor.
Yeah. I think it depends on what your goal is with it.
Like, right.
There's people out there who don't give a shit about woodsmanship. They want that trail camera to tell them absolutely everything that they possibly can. And that's where you hear stories like, hey, I have 35 trail cameras on 100 acres or something like that, which is bananas, right? And so if it's the intention of the individual, right?
So well,
I don't give a shit about woodsmanship. I just want to I want to have a security net on my property, and I know where everything moves every hour of the day. Therefore, that's going to put me in the best position to do that.
So that was going to be my question to you. Like, so where would you put most of your weight in having a camera? Would it be I want inventory, or I'm using it to specifically pattern a buck?
Dude, I don't even know how to answer that anymore, to be honest with you.
I mean,
because I grew I know guys who have only used cell cams, right? Their first trail camera was a cellular trail camera. So they've only used it, right? Let's say I'm 45. Let's say there's a guy who's maybe 25 to 30 right now. More than likely, they've only used cellular trail cameras. So they make a lot of their decisions based off cellular trail cameras. Me, we didn't have cellular trail cameras. And even before when I started hunting, I didn't even run trail cameras, period. And when I got a trail camera, it was the size of a VCR, right? It was huge. It was gigantic. Yep. It took batteries, and those batteries lasted like a week and a half, you know?
And then you had film you had to develop.
Yeah. Yep. So all that, you know, all that stuff. So this technology has made everything simpler. And so again, I just like for me, here's where I feel like the con of that technology is, and that would be you are relying so much on what that camera tells you that you might be missing an opportunity at an animal or filling that freezer because you are relying so heavily on that picture that you forget about access routes, you forget about all the other possibilities, like that spot so heavily that you're not thinking about the terrain leading in and out of that spot, what the weather's doing, is it raining, is, you know, what time of year is it, what are the thermals potentially going to do, all that stuff that actually, in my opinion, makes somebody really good at what they do.
Well, I think that's where you have to have the mindset of like, I'm using the tools in my bag. And yeah, and that's what a cell camera should be. You know, mm-hmm. I use a cell camera because I enjoy it, right? I enjoy setting up a mock scrape and I love seeing the pictures and stuff. I mean, we've just in a couple of years, we've shared some different pictures of different deer. And like last year had a small buck break off the rope and the branch and everything. So for me, it's not even like I'm using it as a tool that way. I'm just using it. It's fun. It's part of deer hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, is there really a con to cell cams? It's all about whether or not you, like, I guess the con would be having a trail camera in a state where you're not allowed to use cell cams is like, okay, well, you're not supposed to use it, but it's gonna make people still use them.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if your mindset is I'm gonna use my cell camera to dial in on this one buck, and when this one buck shows me enough, I'm going in, and you use it to specifically kill one buck, and it gives you real time data, and you did it. Hey, man, you just actually used a tool in your bag, and if that's your mindset with it, so be it. But if it's outlawed, obviously, I mean, that's probably the biggest con.
Yeah. And so what are the other, what pros and cons, like pros and cons of a drone, right? You can, dude, these drones fly over properties with a thermal imaging and they're pointing out every single, like that one guy who was real popular on social media for a while, who was basically hovering over properties for long periods of time and he was watching deer movement. You do that two nights in a row, you're gonna show a pattern of what these deer are doing, what they're going through. Sure. Even if they take two completely different routes but cross a creek in the same spot, you know, that tells you I can go here. And you can learn a lot up through that.
I think the use of a drone on your own property is one thing, but the use of a drone and you're hovering over neighboring properties is invasive. And I really don't like the thought of that, because I think, I mean, for me, it's just like peeking through somebody's windows.
Yeah.
Like, stay on your side of the fence. Like, I don't know. I mean, that's my mindset with that. Wait, but if you're using the drone to actually go out and kill an animal, man, I don't know if I... That's, to me, that's a little bit different. Like, you, the camera thing's different because you're doing some sort of research, some sort of scouting to put the camera in its spot. The drone, you're flying it aimlessly to just looking for, you know, a vision of something. And then once you dial in on that, then you're just, I don't know.
Yeah. I think, what are you supposed to do? Like, make all these rules about how you can only fly over property that you have access to, and you're going to be invading some kind of airspace that, like, at what point does your property stop, right? Like, is it 20 feet in the air?
Invisible line.
Yeah, 30 feet in the air, right? It's almost like a corner crossing issue. You know what I mean? Right. And what if your drone is directly above your property? But it has a wide camera angle that can see all of the stuff that's going on the neighboring farms. Like, dude, that's so complicated and complex. Yeah. How do you even address that? I'm talking more along the lines of, like, from a scouting standpoint, that is the realest time data. Imagine going into a farm, pulling into it, at like 4 a.m. Sun's not even close to getting up yet. You take a drone at 100, 200 feet above the farm and you just do a quick browse. You see where that one buck is at that you want. And maybe it takes 45 minutes to launch it. Go back. You know exactly where that buck is. You've done it enough times to know where he's going to go. Tree stand, buck comes by, shoot him. There it is. Big buck, right? That sounds icky, doesn't it?
That sounds more gross than the cell camera.
Right, right. Now, flip that. You go in. You don't use cell cams, let's say. You don't use an e-bike. You go to your tree stand and a 200-inch buck, the biggest buck, your dream buck, shows up. You've been hunting for 40 years. You shoot him. Bad shot. Oh, dude, I lost blood. Let's call a drone in. That drone does what it has been designed to do, hover over, take pictures, doing the same thing that it would do before, you know, but it's now the application and how it's used. It's now used to recover deer. I look at something like that and I'm just like, okay, cool. It helped you recover your biggest deer. Congratulations. But what other information did you gather on your farm while it was doing that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's okay. So can you use the drone or can you use tracking dogs? You know, like, mm-hmm. is there a more humane way? Is there a better way? Is there a non-invasive way to not push the animal? I mean,
because the goal from an ethics standpoint, shouldn't the goal be to recover the animal at all costs?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's why, like, dogs right. used to be outlawed in Iowa. I don't think you could use them for a while, and then the law passed, and then now you can. And so it just was kind of, I don't know, like.
I don't know. I think using it before. Mm-hmm. Before the shot, with intentions to kill that animal, I think mm-hmm. that's a lot different than finding the animal. And that's just my personal opinion, but I've never used a drone for that purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the same with like a habitat. I know habitat guys who they'll take a drone, they'll fly over, they'll do a deer study, they'll zoom in and out of like where it's thick and stuff like that. And then maybe they'll still walk the property. But what you're doing is you're identifying deer movement from the sky. And at what point then, man, this term fair chase is just becoming more and more gray every single year, every mm-hmm. single year.
Sure.
And so it's like, at what point does it stop? I brought this up in a different conversation and I was like, at what point are we going to be turning hunting into a video game? Where we're going to be able to hunt from our couch?
Yes, we talked about that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So
I think for me, and that's where I kind of went with this fall with not going out of state, is if I'm going to go on a hunting trip, I'm going to go to some public land and I'm going to try to keep it as simple as I can. Like right. I'm not taking cameras mm-hmm. there, you know, and I'd love to have the mindset of like, oh, I'm taking my recurve and I'm just going to go and I'm not going to use digital mapping or anything. I'm just going to walk. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say aimlessly because I'm going to be using woodsmanship. But I think if you can bring those elements back, you're going to enjoy the whole process of it that much more. But I also see the flip side of things. Technology is a great thing, especially if you connect all the dots and you still end up doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm just, I don't know, like we covered so many things in today's episode where it's just like a
hodgepodge,
a hodgepodge of conversations, but it's just all, I'm thinking about all these things right now. Like it's too early for me to start, you know. I was going to get trail cameras out, but the rain is going to stop me. The wet fields are going to stop me. I'm probably going to be getting a new bow this year. So once I get that ironed out, we can talk about that. But right now, I'm kind of at a standstill of the deer hunting activity standpoint. And so I'm thinking about all of these things, especially when I have some steering wheel time. And I'm driving back and forth to places and I don't have any kids in the car like yelling or screaming. And my brain can actually think about these things. And so that these are just a lot of the things that I've been thinking about lately.
I think the last thing I got for today is literally just kind of like what we'd said, you know, is it doesn't matter if it's a crossbow, it doesn't matter public land, private land, it doesn't matter where you're at on the spectrum. As long as you are a hunter, whether it's a deer hunter, a bird hunter or whatever, we need to protect what we have. And, yep. And we need to remember that, like, once it's gone, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So keep the mindset of, like, maybe your opinion or a way of doing something, whether you're for cell cameras or not, maybe that's not the end goal, because the end goal is us actually still being able to do it.
Yeah. 100%, dude. 100%. With that said, thank you very much for taking time. What does a landscaper do when it's wet and rainy outside?
Go pick up supplies and drop them off at jobs and then sit for hours on end and write up estimates.
There you go. All the fun stuff.
No, right. No. That's why I'm like literally dreading doing it. Like these are some of the worst days. It's actually like rain days are terrible. I mean, yeah. I get caught up on stuff, but they're just terrible because being motivated to sit and type up or write up stuff, I just don't enjoy it.
Yeah. The bummer part of your job.
Yeah. I think because, you know, then you question everything. Well, am I charging too much? Am I charging too little? And I don't know.
Yep. So huge shout out to Jason for taking time out of his day as always. Hey guys, do us a favor, go to Spotify or go to Apple Podcast, hit the subscribe button, give us a 5-star review, all of those things, and that will help us get noticed more. And if you ever see us on social media, you know, the How to Hunt Deer Instagram page, do us a favor and go and you know, like it and follow us. And then you can see some content there as well. Good vibes, everybody. Have a great rest of your week. Stay dry, and we'll talk to you next time. Okay. So I'm not a